Good evening, everyone. This is Dolores Cannon, the Metaphysical Hour. And this is October the 7th, 2011, so we are live tonight. I know we've been gone for almost 2 months, and you've been getting shows out of the archives, so you never know if we're going to be live or not. But tonight we're back from our trip, and it was quite a trip. So we are live tonight. And Julia's here, too, and we're both, we haven't got over jet lag yet.
And Julia being, I am her daughter. We had a lot of people asking on the trip, who's that other person on the line? And when you just say Julia, they don't necessarily know that I'm your daughter. So, yes. And we've been together on this trip for the last 2 months, and we're still speaking.
So. It's been quite a trip. And, Bunchie, the last part was very exhausting. But, yeah, people want to know, who is that on there? And I thought everyone knew that Julia was my daughter, and she does travel with me extensively on these trips. And well, I really need her, and she's very important to this whole thing. And I like her input, and everybody else likes her input on the show.
Thank you.
Okay. So let me give out the toll-free number if anyone wants to call in. We're mostly going to discuss the trip, and we found some very interesting things. We went to some very spiritual and metaphysical sites and found a lot of things out that people don't know about these places. So I'll give out the toll-free number in case anyone does want to call in and ask some questions. Okay, it's 1-888-627-6008. Okay. And you know, we weren't even home very long. We had just completed 6 weeks touring all over the United States and up into Canada. We had 5 classes, countless lectures, and then we just got back, was only home a short while, and started on this one. This one was more lecturing, but it was a lot of traveling from place to place. That was what I think made the most tiring of all. But we started out in Sweden. That was the first time to ever go to Sweden, to Stockholm. And that was an interesting place.
Yes, it was. It was very nice.
We had a day off, so we got able to take a tour of Stockholm and see a lot of interesting things. One thing we found out is Sweden is a very expensive country.
Yeah, probably everybody else out there is going, well, duh, we already knew that.
The ones that are from there, but, you know, when we find out something that we don't know, we think there's probably others that don't know it, so we like to share it. But I think it's about the most expensive one that we've ever gone to.
Yeah, I think people in America need to figure out that, you know, we think we've got it, all this hardship and everything, being there, although they're paid more, and the UK is paid more, but they charge so much more for everything. So, it's perspectives and everything, but we think things are expensive over here. They're not. They are not. Compared to these other countries, they are not at all.
Especially the stuff about gas. You're always talking about the gas being so high here. When you go to Europe especially, there you buy by the liter. And when you buy, what is it, three or four liters to a gallon,
right. It comes 3.78 or something like that, I think.
It comes out to a lot more than we pay for gas.
Yeah, it would be closer to, it's probably between $5 and $6 a gallon is what it would be closer to.
I mean, they don't complain. They have to pay it, you know.
Yeah, that's the way it is.
But Sweden, you know, it's on the Baltic Sea, and I've been to Norway, but I've never been to Sweden, and went to Stockholm. It's built on several islands, and they're all connected by these little bridges.
Right.
And way back, they said it was one time the whole place was covered with ice. That's probably Norway, and all of that was at one time all covered with ice.
Right.
But they got long days. The sun rose at 4 o'clock in the morning and set about 10 o'clock. And they said, sometimes the sun is up past midnight. So I said, that's what they talk about, the land of the midnight sun. That's where it is.
Right.
But right now, it was beautiful weather while we were there.
Very nice, yes.
But they drove us all over Stockholm. In one island, you have all these little islands that are all hooked together by bridges. one of these islands was only for business and administration, law. That's all the buildings were there. And what's interesting, they only have one person who lives there all year round.
Yeah, only one resident.
One resident. Everything else, they come and go for business, and then they leave the island where the business and the administration buildings are. This one man, he's 92 years old, and he's the only one who lives there full time.
Right. And we were wondering what happens. I guess he was grandfathered in. You know, when they created everything, he was already there. And we're just wondering what happens. I mean, when he goes, does that mean that's the end of it? Then there's no more residents there? Or, I mean, unless his family somehow inherits his place. But that was interesting.
Uh-huh. But it's a very modern place.
It would be interesting to be the only citizen of, or the only...
resident?
Yeah. Well, I would say population, so many citizens. I guess it's, yeah, one, population one.
But it's a beautiful city. I mean, beautiful buildings. Mm-hmm. And first, I've noticed that with the Nordic countries. They're very clean, very mm-hmm. good. But you talked about having it hard here. Over there, but I love the maternity benefits.
Oh, yeah.
They have those in Norway, too. When you're off from maternity leave, it divided between the mother and the father. The mother gets 6 months off, and the father gets 6 months off. So
well, they
the
said they can, or they could take one. Can mother can take a whole year, or they divide it. Now there, I thought it was 18 months.
I thought it was 6 months apiece that they divide between the mother and the father to take care of the child, and the employer must hold their job for them while they're pregnant. So all
while they're
taking care of the
right.
child for the first year. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was interesting. Everywhere, all over Stockholm, all you see is people pushing baby buggies and strollers.
Yeah, and women and men, everywhere.
Oh, yeah, the men are out there with the strollers and taking care of the babies. There's no women around.
I think it's a wonderful practice because the parents really bond. And that's what they said, that's what it's for. So they are bonded. Because we were telling them, I mean, we're good if we get 6 weeks. And they said, oh, there's no way that's long enough.
It's
there's
not,
no
really.
Way. So.
No, sometimes you're out of the hospital and you only have a few weeks. You got to go back to work.
Yeah, it's usually the most anybody gets is 6 weeks maternity leave here.
Yeah.
So.
But this is a whole year of spending just with the child. And I think that is wonderful. And yet we saw so many... Mm-hmm. babies and buggies all over the place.
Right.
So they take advantage of it.
Well, yeah.
So, you know, of course, there is a king there, a king and a queen. Same with in Norway. They have the same rules there. I don't know if that makes a difference or not. But we have found, I think, when there's a monarchy, they have rules where they really are concerned with the people and try to make it as easy as they can. And I don't know what their pay is, but it must be high enough.
Oh, well, it has to be, because we were talking about how, you know, like what we pay for things over here, and they were just astounded. So, you know, they have to make a lot more money to be able to pay for what they pay for. So
yeah. Like we said, everything costs more. The food, the hotels, everything was a lot more than we pay over here.
Right.
But, one thing we thought was interesting, the man who was taking us around, well, also it's a rich Viking history of the whole area, goes back to the Vikings. But we had a man who was driving us all over Stockholm, and he took us into this museum.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him, I usually don't like museums. He said, oh, this is a museum you have to see. And in this museum was this ship. And this was a fascinating story. The ship is called the Vasa. And he said, what was it, 600 years that it sat at the bottom of the sea?
I think so, yeah.
But it was over 600 years ago. It was built right there in the port of Stockholm. And it's huge. Well, by comparison, it's big. And it was like a luxury ship. And it had all kinds of statues and carvings and gold moldings on the outside. But when they were building it, the king, you know, it was, I guess it was supposed to be a battleship because
right.
it had cannons and it was
right.
like a warship.
Right.
And as they were building it and they got it the size it should be, the king said he wanted another deck
right,
added.
Gun deck, yeah, another
gun deck.
Gun
deck added up on it. Then they put the sails and everything on it. But what he didn't realize that that was going to make it too top-heavy.
Yeah, they didn't have their proportions right for that other deck. They did. It wasn't. It needed to bend wider or something to accommodate that extra deck of guns.
Yeah, their proportions were off.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, they get the whole thing built to please the king. Everybody is out there as it's going to leave the port and make its maiden voyage. Didn't even get out of the harbor.
Right.
And it sunk because it was, they said it turned
top
over
heavy, yeah.
turned over on the side, it sunk.
Right.
But it was top heavy. And anyway, they tried in those days to raise it with everything they could,
mm-hmm.
but there was no way.
Mm-hmm. I don't know how they were doing what they could do. I mean, what they did. Because they retrieved some of the cannons back then. I don't know how. Based on what we saw, what they did actually do later, I don't know how they could have done that with no light. No, you know, I just don't know how.
It was extremely dark underneath.
Dark and cold. You know, I guess they just really wanted those cannons. So.
That's when they built this thing
mm-hmm.
like a diving
yeah.
bell to go down there, too.
Yeah.
It was, what would it look like? It was underwater, and they don't have any suits or anything. They had to fix so they could breathe inside this thing
mm-hmm. right.
and have air.
Right.
Which is like a bubble.
Yeah, because it's something you turn upside down, and you go straight down in the water with it, it's going to create an air bubble in there, and that's what they had. To breathe while they went down.
At the top, and they would dive under, and they would come back up and get to breathe the air at the top of this metal thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it was dark down there, and they were trying to salvage the ship, but it cost an awful lot of money to build it. And they, like she said, they were able to retrieve some of the cannons, and they brought them up. But the rest, it was just impossible. There was no way.
Oh.
So they left it there, and then they forgot about it. They said they were pretty embarrassed by it, really, because they built it and it sunk before it even got out of the harbor, so they just forgot about it.
Right.
So it sat there at the bottom of the harbor for about 600 years until, what was it, in the
1950s.
Oh, yeah, they said this was the 50th anniversary now
mm-hmm.
of the salvage of it.
Right.
And they built this museum around this thing when they finally got it out of the water. But it was an enormous venture to get it out of the water,
okay.
even with our equipment today.
Right.
So what they tried to do was really way beyond what
uh-huh.
you thought they could have done that many years ago.
Exactly.
But they had to retrieve it. They had to get it out of the water. And when they brought it up, because it was in fresh water, the wood was still there. It hadn't
right.
been eaten
completely
away.
Completely preserved. Yeah, it hadn't been eroded or anything. Beautiful.
It had statues. It had all this gold molding and paintings. And they were able to get the entire thing out of the water. And then they had to keep it in water to preserve it while they were putting it all back together again.
Mm-hmm.
And put all the moldings back on. Took a lot of years just to get it all preserved. And then they ended up building this beautiful museum around
right.
the ship. And it's really something to see if you ever get a chance to go over there and the story behind
mm-hmm.
it.
Yeah, right. Absolutely.
So it's the Vasa, V-A-S-A, and it's in Stockholm. And you can see the whole thing, and they have the walks that go all the way up to where you're level
right.
with the sails
mm-hmm.
to look down on it.
Yeah. You can get a really good look at it. And it's amazing how they, you know, that's the only thing is the colors of the paints aren't there, so they're guessing as to what they probably look like. But
that was the only thing that was taken away. But otherwise, the water, they said it was in salt water, would have been eaten away.
Right.
But fresh water was preserved, and then being down in the dirt and the...
In the mud, yeah.
Mm-hmm. For all those years. So that was a fascinating thing to see. That preserved, and it was an interesting story.
Mm-hmm.
We like these stories when we go somewhere. So anyway, that was Sweden. I gave a class there. So then we had to go from Sweden. We went to Dublin, Ireland. And we spent quite a while there doing all kinds of lectures and radio shows and TV shows, all kinds of things. And we stayed with at a man's house in Dublin, and it really reminded us of home, of Arkansas.
Yeah, the terrain was very much like here, yeah.
The hills and the the countryside are very beautiful. But he was telling us a lot about Dublin, and up until 5 years ago, there was no divorce allowed in Dublin.
Yeah, it's a very Catholic country, yeah.
And so after now that they've allowed divorce, they said things have been a lot easier over there. Otherwise, it was really hard. One good thing, though, is that the friction of the war between the Irish and the English has really quieted down a lot, because there was a lot of problems between the religions and the wars. I may not have all the facts straight. Somebody out there may know more about it, but... Oh, they had all these bombings and everything going on. But they said that has really quieted down. They're not having the problems anymore at all. They did have a border crossing into North Ireland at Belfast, and we drove through there, and it's all been completely dismantled. Mm-hmm. You used to have soldiers there checking people going in and out. Now you don't even know where it was. You just go from one side into the other. So... the war has really quieted down. There's not the friction that there was between the people or any of that. And we did discover in our lectures and things, the people there are becoming more spiritual and metaphysical.
Well, they're going through a transition, and it's interesting to see when like this is happening in different countries, when they're coming out of... Well, that's what they said. They were tired of Catholicism. They're tired of it, and they just...
The oppression with
it. And so, but then they're out there trying to find out, okay, then what? You know, and so that's where they're in the searching mode. So they're in a different place, really. They know they want something, they know there's something else out there, but they're not quite sure what it is. They know it's not the religion they've been in, but they're still kind of, So they're not fully into the whole thing yet. So I think it's what we're going to see as a lot of people wake up and they're moving across from religion to spirituality, you know. And
because the Catholics had a great hold on that area for a long time, and they said that is changing. Mm-hmm. Especially now with the new laws, they can get divorces, and things are a lot better. But they did say, though, one thing in our lectures and everything, the people there are still terrified of death. Mm-hmm. But that's mostly because of the church.
Right, yeah. Some things are just really ingrained. So.
But that's what we noticed. First, I was wondering, would they accept what I was doing? But they really did. They said they're becoming more spiritual and metaphysical. They know there's more out there.
Right.
And things are changing. But outside of Dublin is where we went to Newgrange. And I mentioned that right before we left, that I'd never heard of Newgrange before, and I looked it up on the Internet. But it was quite an amazing place, and it was rare to get to go there because it's hard to get in to see it.
Right.
And they said whenever we first wanted to go, they said, okay, what year?
Right. You can go there at any time and be outside of it, but to get to go inside, you have to have, you know, that's what takes a bit to get inside. So.
Yeah, because it's like a little historical place now. You know, they have it preserved just like all the other sites in England are. Mm-hmm. But they aren't telling the whole truth about Newgrange. I don't think they know.
I think they're telling what they think they know.
Yeah.
That's it.
It's like with all of these historical sites.
Mm-hmm.
And when the guide is telling you what it is, what they think it is, it's all, we don't know.
Right, and it's based on their guessing, based on what we know today, or maybe how we live today, and what we think that they might have done back then, because, of course, they were lesser developed than we are now, so we have to go on that and know that they did something different, you know, or whatever they did. When none of that is true, they at that time, they may have been much higher, more highly developed. And so, you know, we really can't put these things, put limits on them and say, okay, they had to do it this way because we have no idea.
And they had no idea what it was for,
right.
used for. We have more information, I think, with the work I do.
Right.
And with our, what we've discovered.
Well, when you got in there, I mean, they were trying to say it was a burial.
Tell them what it was.
Okay,
the first Newgrange, it's 5,000 years old, isn't it? And they said it's older than the pyramids.
Well, but the pyramids aren't dated correctly. I found out when I got there. So it may not be older than the pyramids.
But it's still 5,000 years old and older than Stonehenge, they say.
Yeah, again, all these things, none of those things are dated correctly. So
yeah.
And it's probably older than that, too. So
probably they are all older. Uh-huh. But they just found it was on this farmer's land that had been there. It's like a mound. And there's lots of mounds all over England, just like there are in the United States. There's a lot of mounds that are considered Indian burial mounds. And it was just a mound, and he discovered it when he was going in there. Oh, this was in the 1600s, I think. Mm-hmm. He went in to get stones to use, and that's when he saw there was something inside. And it was lucky there was an archaeologist living there, and he said, let me take over and look at it. But the amazing thing, this thing is, it's huge, big mound.
Mm-hmm.
But if you were to take something like the size of a dinner plate.
Right.
And then put your finger on it up to maybe just the first joint. That's all that they have excavated out of the entire thing. And you know there's more in there. There has to be. It can't just be that one little entrance that they found, and it didn't even go very far back. And that was all they showed, and they've got how you can go into it, but there's something more inside that whole mound. You know there is.
Yeah.
But didn't they say they wanted to do radar testing and things, and they wouldn't let them do it?
They may have. I don't remember.
Yeah. Okay, but anyway, yeah, you talked about we were able to go into it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and they're trying to say it's a burial, or it was a tomb, or a burial ceremony, things like that. And it was so obviously female energy and fertility when you got inside of it. There was nothing there about death. Nothing. And you could see where they did, you know, they had altars and they had, there was one part was a bowl that almost even seemed like, it almost felt like a birthing room. Even the entryway when you walk through it, it felt like, I mean, when you think about how it looked and how it was done, it was almost like the vagina of a woman. Going
the
in there,
going
yeah, absolutely,
born.
Yeah, and so, I mean, it just had that whole other feeling to it. It didn't had no feelings of death. It was nothing like that.
Well, they found a few bones, and that was why they thought it was a burial chamber. But that could have happened any time,
right,
down through history. But they said it was built by the farmers. In those days, they were just discovering agriculture. That's how long ago, over 5,000 years ago, they're just learning how to plant and how to harvest and hunting.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to find a way to build something like that with huge stones.
Right.
They're not the big stones you have at Stonehenge or the pyramids, but they're still, they're big.
Well, right. And when you get in there, you can see, I mean, they're making the big thing out of it being a mound. Well, when I was in there, and I got very clearly that it was not intended to be that way, it was these stones that were placed in this position that created this hill. The mound came later, just of years of dirt collecting, and then it grew grass, and then it that kind of thing. It was not intended to be that way. Because they were showing how you could see these rocks, these huge stones, because they make them when you're under there and you're in the middle of it, they said 200 tons of stone is on top of you, you know, so it's like, yeah, thank you very much. I needed to know that. But they're very strategically placed, these flat stones, in a circle, and they keep getting smaller and smaller till you have a small hole, and then they have a capstone on top of there. And they're saying, well, that's just how they did it, and then they covered it up, apparently, with dirt, you know, and this is a burial thing. But when I was in there, I looked up, and I very clearly got the message that that stone moves, and it was off most of the time.
Yeah, so, because, you know, what we found about these ancient sites, they were used for astronomy. But the ETs especially had a lot to do with watching the stars and keeping the position of the stars. And that's what I said. I bet there's a hole at the top.
Mm-hmm.
But didn't they say that some things they found and they don't tell people about, they've taken them away, that there was a crystal at the top of that?
Yeah, they found, and then there was also, they found where that rock, that stone was moved. They could find the marks where the... where they could see it had been moved, and then there had been a crystal, and so it was like it was to amplify probably light or whatever that was done.
And even at the entrance where you go in, there's a lot of huge stones with carvings on them.
Right.
But they said where you go into the entrance, originally there were two crystals, huge crystals there.
Yeah.
They're not there anymore. Yeah. But on the December the 21st, the winter solstice is when the sun rises and it comes directly through the opening of the door.
Right, at that certain point. Yeah, as it's rising. And so, I mean, it doesn't make sense to do this. You know there's got to be more to this than just, well, it's actually 5 days in the year. It's not the one day because they said it's the 2 days on either side of the solstice. So you have 5 days that this can happen. But it doesn't make sense to create this place for essentially 1 day or 5 days a year. So you know there's other stuff that's going to happen in here. And
But the light would come through that entrance, and they said they have to have a lottery to let people in there on that day so they can see it happen again.
Right.
As the light shoots back to that chamber.
Right.
And you can imagine if originally it had two crystals there, that would have amplified the light even.
Right, right. That's what they said. It was like crystals right there, too. So something happened there.
But the guy didn't even tell us about the crystals. We found out that from other people who were historians
that were traveling with us. I don't think they knew it. I don't know that the guides know it.
Mm-hmm. So it's a very interesting, fascinating place that here again they don't know anything about. But according to the work I'm doing, we know it had more to do with astrology and the stars, just like Stonehenge did.
Right.
And it was a way of... marking the stars and keeping track of them, and it was for a specific reason. And you know, if the ETs came from the stars, one of the main things they would want to keep track of was where their home planet was from. And it's very similar today. Whenever we shoot off rockets, we want to make sure that where we're going is in the closest proximity.
Right.
That when we're going to be the closest to each other, when we're going to shoot something off, which may be another reason why they're measuring the time, the dates and everything.
Right.
But that was what I got. That was the same with the pyramids and Stonehenge and all of that, wanting to know where are the stars at any certain time.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we're on to a lot more than the archaeologists are, but to think that a bunch of primitive people just beginning to learn agriculture could have dragged all that up there and arranged it exactly to where the light would come in.
Right.
And say it was a burial chamber.
Yeah.
I mean,
well,
you know.
What purpose?
Yeah, I mean, think for yourself. So Newgrange was really interesting. It was different. And I know there's a lot more to it. That's what I said. I know that stone at the top moves.
Right.
It was open.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They said it wasn't, but you...
Yeah, no, they said it was like that was how it was built, and then the dirt was put on top of it and created... It's like the dirt was always there. No, the dirt wasn't always there. It was put there. I mean, it just happened to come later as, you know, that's the way things happen, you know? Dirt flies on things, so...
Mm-hmm.
And grass grows.
So the same way with the ones here in the States. So it was an interesting thing if we start looking into the history of all these archaeological places. But that's one I'd never heard of.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot more over there. They said there's more of these, too, but they're not easily accessible.
Right. A lot of those stone things are on private property. And so, because we were finding books, where they're talking about a lot of other stones and things, they said, but they're on private property, so you can't get to them.
Mm-hmm. Oh, another thing, on the outside of New Grange, the mound, there's a whole ring of stones.
Right, similar to Stonehenge.
Stonehenge and Avebury, just like that.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So it puts them all with the same thing, because we found those are marking the progression of the stars also.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Got to have something to gauge the sky against, and so you measure it as the stars move through the opening.
Right.
So that, you know, they're all connected.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I think I'm going to be writing something about this stuff in my new book that I'm working on now, Convoluted Four. There's going to be a lot about these places we just went to. But after that, oh, we went to London, and we went to Bournemouth and Cardiff and Bristol. We were lecturing about 10 different cities all over.
And it was really nice because you get a good feel of the country, and every one of those places had a different energy about it. You know, they were just very different.
Mm-hmm.
Bristol was a really nice energy, but that's up in the Avebury. I mean, that's all up in that area around Glastonbury and stuff, so that would make sense for that. But they were all nice places.
Mm-hmm. So. But then we did the Glastonbury tour, and I had never been in the inside there. I've been to Chalice Well, but I've never been on the inside.
And the Abbey.
The Abbey, yeah, where they have the ruins. And, of course, we had, like, a tour, and I guess that was kind of the main feature of it. The people were
There were three of you. So really we're getting three different perspectives on most of these places.
Yeah, one of them was giving the historical, another was giving the spiritual, and I was giving what I found in my work.
Right, we don't know what to call that.
I don't know. With the New Grange, and then with Glastonbury, of course I went into a lot about the Jesus material.
Right.
Because at one time that was all underwater. And that was where Joseph of Arimathea came to get his tin that he traded all over the world because it could just sail right in there. Now, of course, there's no water there. It was all pumped out.
Drained, yeah.
But Glastonbury was interesting. And all of that has a different energy about it, very old, old energy.
Yeah.
But then they had the tour. And I've been on that a couple of times, and you've been up there to go all the way to the tour. That's another huge mound. That church was added much later. I don't know how they built it up, that tower.
I think that's when the water was there, and they could. They could just bring the material up, you know, with boats, and they could get it pretty close, and it wasn't as far to take it. Because, that's too hard. There's I think it was built when the water was there.
Very likely. But one thing, it's like a huge mound sitting in the middle of outside the Glastonbury. And just looking at it, I was thinking, you know, there's something inside that. There has to be. Just like all of those. If they were to find out, they said they could do radar soundings, but they haven't done it. They said there has to be something inside.
I bet
it.
They have. They just don't want to tell what they found. That's a conspiracy.
But one thing, the historian said, oh, yes, they're about halfway up the tour. See, they have pathway that goes all the way up. You can walk all the way up to the top of the tour. But on the other side of this huge mound, there was an opening.
Oh.
And they said for years, people would walk up there and go inside, and I don't remember what she said was in there, but you could just go back in it, like an opening back in there.
Like a cave or something.
Something like that. And they would stay in there for a while. But the people that went in there and stayed,
this is a rumor. This is what they said.
Yeah, they said... The ones who went in there and stayed for, I don't know how long, a day or so or whatever, went insane. And so they had to block up the opening and not let anybody else in there at all.
Yeah, but that could be just a story just to keep people from going in there.
That's also, I'm just thinking about that. That could be a way to keep people from going in. You had a fear factor.
Right.
You don't want to go in there, you go crazy. Or it could be there's a definite energy, strong energy there that people can't take.
Right.
Because people who spent the night in the pyramids talk about strange effects. So I don't know if that's true or not, but they said there used to be an opening. They know where it is, but now it's blocked up so you can't go inside. And they said, no, you don't want to go in there because you go crazy. So we don't. There's a lot of things about those places we don't know anything about. We don't know what it is.
That would be fun to went through the session if you could go back. I mean, I know some of these places, you get them by hit and miss. You can't say go back to here, but it'd be fun to find out more about all those areas. So
yeah, because I never know what's going to come out in my session. Mm-hmm. It went to Chalice Well. It was interesting, White Spring.
Mm-hmm.
It was back in this hollow. It was right in the middle of Glastonbury. And they said
it was
they
right next to the Chalice Well. It was right by the tour also.
Uh-huh. But you go into it, it's like going into a cave, really.
Uh-huh. Dark. Like they said it used to be a tavern. They made it into a tavern. But it's just, yeah, it's just a spring right there in the middle of a cave, essentially. So.
It's very dark in there, too. They've got candles lighting around it. But you walk in, and there's this huge, enormous spring, as big as a room. The water is just, it's all full of water. It's a stone thing, like you want to say a huge, huge bathtub, I guess.
Right.
Made out of stone, and it's the water is coming out of the side of the hill, and this whole big thing is full of water, and then it's running over and going out of there.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, you can't see very much in there.
No.
But as we're standing there watching this one
man's place. Well, no, we were doing a very, very sacred little
meditation.
Little thing there, whatever, and all, you know, doing the water, and we were blessing the water and giving it back to Mother Earth, and we were doing this beautiful.
We had about 20 people in our group.
Yeah, there weren't 20 of us in there doing that.
Yeah.
Maybe about 10 of us, but
you're doing very
small. Yeah, it was all beautiful, and some other people were standing around watching us because we were, you know, all doing this. It was very sacred, and these people were waiting.
And they were playing flute music and stuff.
And then we got done, and
we were all done, and then all of a sudden, this man, if you heard the water splash, this man jumps into the water, and he's totally naked. And he's a what? You know?
Yeah, they can do this in other countries.
He said, here, you know, the police would grab him. But it's so dark in there, you couldn't see anything anyway. But it just all of a sudden, somebody jumps into this huge spring, and then he jumps out again, and they grab a towel and cover him up. But you could tell he was naked.
Yes, he was naked. He didn't cover it very fast. He was proud of himself.
But they said this is part of the ceremony that's done there.
Oh, okay.
So
I didn't hear that.
You just have to be there at the right time, I guess, to get it. To see it, but they had a lot of strange things going on over there. That's what one of the other groups said. You couldn't do that in London.
Could do that here either.
So anyway, that was Glastonbury. But then we went to there, and we got to tell them about Stonehenge.
Uh-huh.
We were able to get to Stonehenge the first time. We were able to get into the center of it. Before we've gone there, we've been there many times. We were in the outside where you're allowed to walk around,
but you
can't go into the inside. So we got there just as the sun was rising and got to go into the center, and it was pouring down rain.
It wasn't pouring down rain. It was mist. It was heavy mist. It was wet.
And when we got there into it, it stopped at that time.
Yes.
Just long enough for us to do our thing. But one of the reasons I wanted to see the middle of it was because there's a chapter in one of my new books about a session I had back whenever it was the original Stonehenge. And I wanted to have them to see what it was. We stand out there with umbrellas, that's all I know. Anyway, in the session I did, this man was there back when it was in the original Stonehenge, and he was talking about the ceremonies they would do, and that he would stand at the north and during certain times of year. I don't know what solstice it was. He would stand at the north. The other people would stand at the south, the east, and the west, And there was a village near there, and everyone would come from the village to take part and watch the ceremonies as they did the rituals, and it had to do with the nature and the planting or thing. But when they would do these rituals, he said there was a portal right in the center of Stonehenge. And when they would do these rituals, the portal would open up, and they could go into, they said go into the inner earth, or they could travel to other dimensions. So there was an active portal right in the center. Well, in the story, he is killed because later on they had Nordic invaders come in and killing all the people in the village. And they slaughtered, he tried to hold the energy there, but they slaughtered him right at the center where the portal was. And they did it on purpose to taint the energy. Well, then after that, they said they would never have the pure energy it had before because of the violence that occurred there. So over time, then they said they destroyed it by knocking the stones down to close the portal and destroy the energy that was at the portal. So I wanted to see what this was like. So we got into the center. It's much smaller than it looks like from the outside because they have two rings of stones, and you can't tell that from the outside. The smaller ring. And this one woman who was with us, who was a historian, said her, within her father, that knows, has all this information about energy and about the ley lines and all of that. And when I got in there, these two huge stones were laying on this one side. And I said, those don't belong there. She said, no, those were the lintels that were upon the top that have been knocked down. Mm-hmm. And I asked her, where would the center have been? And she located it. But she was doing things with dowsing rods. And on some of the main stones, she was showing how far up the stone the energy would go. And these other ones in the group were playing with the little dowsing rods, and they went to where she said the center of the Stonehenge was, where the portal would have been, and their rod was going crazy. They were just spinning round and around and around in a circle. So we're assuming by that there still is energy right there. Although the portal has been closed. And what you said, you thought...
Well, we did, a little ceremony while we were there. And Vitaly was there, who he'd been on the show before. He had his crystal skull. He put it right in the center of what we determined to be the center of the circle. He put it in the center, and I think that may have helped too. But we were doing our ceremony. And I could feel, I was directed to do something with my hands. I'm not sure what I was doing, but it was like doing something with energy. And it was the next day, someone was asking about it, and just asking about what we did and everything. There were, you know, several of our group was moving several places. And what I heard them tell me is that we resurrected the portal. Mm-hmm. It was that term. I was trying to say another word, like reactivated or something like that, and they said, no, you resurrected the portal. So I don't know what that means, but that's what I heard.
Mm. But if you know how those dowsing rods work, there's no way you could direct it to spin like that. So that was the exact center. And so I'm going to tell the story in the new book when I get to that chapter about the portal at Stonehenge. But also later, the woman who was telling us all this information about mm-hmm. the ley lines and everything, she had taken a picture mm-hmm. just as we were approaching Stonehenge.
Yeah, before we got there, yeah.
And it's still kind of dark. And I'm going to put that in the book, too. It shows Stonehenge, and she just took it from a distance.
She just put her camera on a fence post and took the picture. She just felt the need to take a picture at that point. And it's just amazing. I'll let you tell it.
Well, what we could see in the picture, there was orbs, but there was a huge orb mm-hmm. right over the center mm-hmm. of Stonehenge.
And it looks like it's running across. I mean, it has like a comet line behind it. It's not just an orb. It's got the movement lines behind it. And where normally you don't have something like that with an orb. An orb is just there. But this was a moving, a flying orb.
So. And it was right over the center of Stonehenge, mm-hmm. where we would have estimated, after mm-hmm. we got up there, was the portal would have been.
Yeah.
So we're going to put that in the book, too. It's interesting about that.
Mm-hmm.
But her father had done a lot of experiments with ley lines and energies and vortexes and came up with a lot of different measurements that she was
showing. Well, that was one of the things that she said. It was this one as well as some, maybe it was Avebury also, those circles, that are like Stonehenge, the circle that was created there. If you multiplied that by 100, you had the exact circumference of the Earth.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
So this is all by accident, done by primitive natives.
Mm-hmm.
They come up with the exact circumference of the Earth.
Yeah.
Hmm. But she did tell another story, and I'm going to try to check it out, because she said this was very much in the news at the time it happened in Stonehenge, one of the stones there. And it was in the 1950s,
oh, yeah.
So I'm going to try to check that out on the Internet and see what I can find before I finish this book. It was called The Screaming Stone. And it was one of the stones. It was on the inner circle, wasn't it, or the outer?
It was on the outer one, and it leaned slightly inward.
Toward the middle.
Right. And they thought, well, something's wrong. It should be standing upright. And so they were wanting to stand it back upright.
They got in there with their machinery and everything, trying to straighten this stone out. And it didn't want to budge.
Well, no, and right. And as they're doing it, then it cracked. And
yeah,
it had been there all that time, just fine, but they were afraid it was going to fall over. That's why they wanted to straighten it up.
Well, they kept working and working on it. They finally tried to straighten it up. When they did, it cracked. And they said it let out a sound like a scream. Now, whether that's, somebody else said maybe electronic sound or something, but they said it was like a human scream, and it was heard as far away as Avebury. And at that moment, a huge thunderstorm also broke out. So somebody was angry.
Yeah.
So they called that the Screaming Stone. And I'm going to have to check that out and find out more about that.
Mm-hmm.
But it was heard as far away as Avebury, like a human scream. Mm-hmm. Now they tried to fix it by putting concrete on it.
Right.
And it looks pitiful.
Mm-hmm.
It is standing upright now, but it's like either with the energy or whatever you want to call it, the stone's alive, whatever it was, it let out this horrified scream. And I said, I wondered what the man thought whenever that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And she said he let out some cuss words.
Yeah, like he knew he messed up.
He did something he was not supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. So anyway, I'm going to check this out because I think it would be interesting.
Uh-huh.
And there must be more information. She said it occurred in the 1950s, and it was in all the newspapers, and it was a very big thing when it happened. So somebody out there may be able to find some information. And if you do, email it to me, because I'm always interested in getting verification on these
uh-huh.
things. So anyway, then we did that, and then we went to Avebury the next day, which was really interesting
uh-huh.
too. There are more stones at Avebury than there are at Stonehenge.
Right.
They're arranged differently. They're more in circles. They don't have the lintels across the top. But all of those places, if you get a chance to go over there, all these ancient sites are really impressive. And then with Silvery Hill, and I wanted to find some more out about that, too. That's right near there. It's only just in the last few years that they had an opening at the top of Silvery Hill. It all of a sudden just began caving in and forming an opening.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to know what that was about. We were asking the historian, and she said they really hushed that up fast,
mm-hmm.
and they won't let anybody go up there and explore it or anything. So, these things are talking to us. There's a lot more things going on right now.
And more is going to happen.
These old places are all coming back to life. But there's more in those whole areas. You just don't believe what the local historians say, because all they're going to tell you is that the local natives built these things and drug these stones for thousands, hundreds of miles.
And everything's a burial chamber. They're burying a lot of people, apparently.
Even though there's no sign of that. And same with the other parts. Okay. I'm trying to think how much more time we've got to talk about these things, because we're going to save some for next week. But we was all over that area, and then I had to go to back to the London area, and I had a class at Farringdon, which is out by Oxford. Had another class. Our classes are getting huge everywhere we go. That class was, 84 people?
Right.
The one in Sweden was very large, too.
Right.
Even in the States now, the classes are, it's an average 60 people is getting to be the norm. And I think my classes, when we go overseas, when I leave again, they're also filling up. But people are really interested in learning this technique, so they are growing. We do have some more to talk about. We could save it to next week, though, about Julia went to Egypt and I went to Rome.
Right.
We finally finished our work and we were going to have a few days, but we wanted to take a little time.
Before our next thing we had to do.
Yeah. Before traveling on, we've been working hard. It was every day going from place to place, doing radio shows, TV shows, lectures, and the classes, and there was very little time off. And going on this tour of the sacred site, it was really interesting, but still all of that gets tiring when you're going from one place to the other. So I didn't want to go to Egypt. She was her own special thing she was going to do. So she goes to Egypt, and I went to Rome.
Well, as a preacher, we told before, one of the reasons I was going over there, the people I was meeting, it would be a matter of, being able to coordinate maybe an event over there next year with you. So that's why I was going over there to check all that out.
To arrange for that. So next week we're going to finish this, and she's going to talk to you about the things she found in Egypt that the average tourist never gets to see.
Mm-hmm. Right. Things just kept open. It's funny how that happens. It just doors open for you. So. You're supposed to be someplace, you'll be there. I was hoping that I'd be the right vibration and all these things that magical chambers would open, but
it didn't happen like that.
I did get to go in some places that they said they'd never been, so that was cool. So maybe in a way some doors opened, but just not the way I was thinking it might.
And I wanted to go to Rome because I wanted to see some things there. The Colosseum and some other, the Vatican, we can see the Vatican from our for the dining room in the hotel.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not Catholic, and so it didn't impress me to accept it's a big, beautiful building.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll talk about that next week as we're going into that part, and she'll tell you what she found in Egypt. But you are setting up a tour of cruise for next year.
Right, and it's in the beginning works of it. It looks like it's going to be in October. And it will go around the Mediterranean. They're calling it a Holy Land cruise because it stops and, where it's stopping and everything. It does some, and my brain isn't active enough right now to be able to remember all these places. But I think
we're still on jet lag.
It starts, I think, in Greece. And anyway, it moves around and stops in, I can't think what's up
Israel?
Here. Yeah, it has stopped in Israel and then Egypt. But it keeps, goes all around the Mediterranean. It's like a 12-day cruise, I think, and we'll have you and maybe a few other of our people, authors or something on there that will be doing workshops and doing talks and things, so as well as all these wonderful places we'll get to see.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be really good.
So if anybody is going to be interested in that cruise, contact us. We'll have more information.
Well, as we get it, we're working on it right now, and then we'll have it out where we'll have all the information out there. Probably in the next month or so, we'll have it all out.
Yeah, because we are planning next year. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot going on, a lot more places to see.
Right.
Then you are working it up that eventually we'll go back to Egypt.
Right.
Anyway.
Egypt is going to be, hopefully next year as well. We've got to figure out how to work all these things in, because we're getting a lot of requests for things over in that part of the world, so we've got to figure out how to do it. We need to clone you. That's really what our next thing is.
That's what people keep saying. We need to be in more places at once. But, yeah, more countries keep calling, come here, come there, and it's hard to work them all in.
Right.
And everywhere you go, they want you to come back.
Yeah. And that's part of why, we're shifting how we'll be doing things, teaching and lecturing and everything. We'll probably use more Internet resources. But that's one of the reasons, because you're one person, and there's a big, wide world out there that wants to see you. So we've got to adjust how we do it.
Uh-huh, but I think it can be done now because the Internet has really changed so much.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay, but anyway, that's caught you up on the first part of our trip, and we just got back late last night, so we have not even begun to get over jet lag.
We might have begun it, but it's hitting me. It's going to take a few days to adjust to. In my world right now, it's, 2 o'clock in the morning. So I'm feeling it. I want to go to bed.
Yeah. That's what happens when you do these things. But I'm going to have, next week will be another live show. Then I head out again, Singapore and Australia. So we want to fill as much as we can into these live shows.
Right.
And people, I was amazed, are really listening everywhere we went, all over that whole area. Right. They are listening to the show. And I appreciate it, you guys out there, to know we're not sitting here talking to the wall.
Talking to ourselves. We're not talking to the wall.
We're talking to
each other.
Talking to each other.
Are you saying I'm a wall?
No, I usually stare at the wall.
Okay. I'm here.
All right, so we're just going to close for tonight, and thanks, everybody, for listening. And I've been told you like these travel logs, especially when we bring up things nobody knows about.
Right.
So we're going to close for tonight, and we'll see you next week then. Thanks, everyone, for listening, and good night.
Good night.